Hey, meat!
Ranch.
Oh, stop yourself, you big baby.
What?
You can't just call me a baby. Why does it got to be a big baby?
Well, you are a big baby.
Always taking shots.
And I need to correct us because we were talking about the last local announcer that's a nationwide name. I forgot about Bob Uecker.
How do you forget about Bob?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. He was on a sitcom, for crying out loud.
He's everywhere.
Did you watch Mr. Belvedere?
No. I have no idea what that is.
Oh, it's okay. So Bob Uecker was the dad of this family, and for some reason they had a butler. I don't know, like a suburban family, and they just had this butler, and it was Mr. Belvedere. Yeah.
All right. Whatever you say, Ronj.
Are you gonna? You're going to act like I'm wrong because
I don't
know about Mr. Belvedere
I don't know what you want me to say. I haven't seen it.
Sorry. I will tell you to look this up, and it's a good one of those silly SNL sketches from like the 80s. The Mr. Belvedere fan club SNL sketch is really funny.
Can I walk out of the studio now and go look it up?
Well, let's do this fight first, and then during the break do it.
Damn it.
But it's just a bunch of people obsessed with Mr. Belvedere. It's funny. Trust me. What are we fighting over
hashtag
today?
Yay. We've got VIP tickets to the STL FC versus Hartford Athletic game. It'll be on Labor Day weekend, September 1st. VIP tickets include those shady seats that you love, Ranj. Those shady seats are on the shady seats. Shady.
Careful.
Yeah. Are on the west side of the stadium. You'll have access to the Soccer Park Grill indoors with more food and beverage options. Plus much more. You can learn more at St. Louis, spelled out, stlouisfc.com.
All right, so Miles, who won the fight yesterday, he is out.
I think he's scared.
He did not answer the phone.
I even left a message.
So I said that Miles went out on top, you know, because he beat Randy, he can never lose. This text message says, I can't believe this, from a 636, I respectfully disagree, Miles is a loser.
Whoa.
No show, no go. He defaulted. Randy wins. I think that's a little harsh, but he might be right.
Not wrong.
I know. So who's the fighter today trying to take on Randy?
We've got Brock stepping up to the plate.
Hey, Brock.
Hey, how you guys doing? I think I figured out why Miles didn't show up today.
Why is that?
Because he's pitching tonight. He couldn't
do it. Oh, yeah. Well, we saw Miles yesterday. That is not the guy pitching tonight. I can tell you that.
Why do you say it like that?
Well, he was a nice guy. But he's not Miles Michaelis. I know that. Brock, are you ready to take on Randy?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, man. Question number one. Last night, Yadier Molina picked up his 372nd career double. Which Hall of Famer leads all catchers with 572 doubles? Is it Pudge Fisk, Pudge Rodriguez, or Johnny Bench?
Let's do Bench.
Question number two, Brock. The Pirates' Brian Reynolds. He's one of the favorites for the NL batting title. Since 1900, only two rookies have won a batting title. Tony Oliva did it in 1964. Who is the only other rookie to do it? Is it Nomar Garciaparra, Albert Pujols, or Ichiro?
Ichiro.
Question number two, Scott Rolen has 8 Gold Glove Awards. Besides Brooks Robinson, who is the only other third baseman with more Gold Gloves than Rolen? Is it Robin Ventura, Mike Schmidt, or Buddy Bell?
We'll go Mike Schmidt.
And question number four, the Cardinals play host to the Rockies tonight. Matt Holliday and Larry Walker, both former Rockies. They combined for 388 home runs in a Rockies uniform. Which one of those two guys had more home runs with the Rockies? Was it Walker or Holliday?
I'll say Walker.
Let's bring in Randy. Brock, how do you feel?
I feel pretty positive. I'm not going to be negative like you, Ranj.
Oh, no. Hold on, Brock.
Thank you.
Brock, I am a pragmatist and a realist.
Kind of a Debbie Downer.
I'm sorry.
Throw that one in there.
Look, if you want to be all head in the clouds about everything and walk in front of a bus because
sunshine,
you don't think it's going to kill you, go right ahead. I'm the realist that'll step in and tell you, don't walk in front of that bus because it will kill you. I'm here for you, Brock.
Not always.
All right, I'll remember that.
All right, thanks, man. Hey, when you need me, just call. Here's Randy. Randy, say hello to Brock.
Hi, Brock. How are you?
Hey, Randy. How's it going?
Doing well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for playing.
Hey, real quick, Brock, what is your favorite celebrity named Brock?
Brock Lesnar.
You know, I knew he was going to say that.
How many others are named Brock?
Brock Holt.
Brock Holt, yeah.
Okay. Lou Brock.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar's fine, too.
Brock Heward.
Okay.
Former quarterback.
back in the day.
He's a Seattle talk show guy now. ESPN guy. Yeah.
I'm going to look up
He's the analyst
Brocks.
Now for the Seahawks.
Brock Osweiler.
Oh, yeah. How can he forget about him? All right, question number one, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, Yachty with his 372nd double for his career.
Wow.
Which Hall of Famer leads catchers with 572?
So Yachty got to 372?
That's right.
And he's still 200 behind?
That's right.
Wow. I will... Bench played 15 years. It's got to be, I would think, between... I don't even think Bench... I think it's got to be between the two Pudges. And I'm going to go Pudge Rodriguez. I'm going to go Ivan Pudge Rodriguez, whose son pitches for the Giants now. The other Pudge being Pudge Fisk, by the way.
Again, there are way too many kids of major leaguers I used to watch that are playing Major League Baseball. It's too much. It's really hard.
Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, man.
Or Jose Martinez.
Jose Martinez.
Yeah.
Cafe.
Formerly Carlos Martinez.
That's correct. Yep.
Question number two, Randy. The Pirates, Brian Reynolds. He's one of the favorites for the NL batting title this season. Since 1900, only two rookies have won a batting title. Tony Oliva did it in 1964. Who was the other rookie to do it?
You know who came close? And this was one of those careers that was shortened by injury. Should have been a great player. Jolton Joe Charbonneau for the Cleveland Indians back in the late 70s. I believe, though, the other rookie that may have won a batting title would be Ichiro, who won the MVP and Rookie of the Year in that same year.
One of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
Question number three, Scott Rolen, 8 gold gloves. Besides Brooks Robinson, who I tried to kill last week, who is the only other third baseman with more gold glove awards than Rolen?
Mike Schmidt won it every year during the 70s. So 70s and 80s. Well, not every year, but you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
So I'm going to go with, Michael Jack Schmidt.
Before we get to question four, I have to read this text from the Hotshot text line.
Do not read
not
the
that,
one I not pointed
out.
Not
that one, Runge. This one from the 314. Hey, Fastlane, here's a new one. I am in stop-and-go traffic on Highway 40 due to a baby pig running loose.
Get out of town. We might have to get the helicopter out.
I wonder if it's greased.
It's probably why they can't catch it.
Mm-hmm. Who's having a greased pig competition on 40?
Shouldn't be doing that. Stop-and-go traffic will cause that.
Especially this time of day. Gosh.
People trying to get to the ballpark early?
Happens in Kansas City all the time.
Randy, come
what
on.
What in the hell?
Gosh. Thought you were going to be nice today.
Yeah.
All right, Randy, question number four. Matt Holliday, Larry Walker, both hit a lot of home runs for the Cardinals and the Rockies. 388 combined home runs in a Rockies uniform between the two of them. Which one of them had more home runs in a Rocky uniform?
I am going to go with Larry Walker.
We have a winner. I'm sorry, Brock, but Randy got you. I think he felt insulted by Miles' absence today, and he just took it out on you. A 4-3 win. It was a good fight. You did pretty well. But Randy, in the end, gets the victory, got them all right. Ivan Rodriguez has 572 career doubles. It was Ichiro. He hit 350 in 2001 to win the batting title. Mike Schmidt is the only other third baseman with more gold gloves than Scott Rolen. And it was Larry Walker with 258 home runs, had more with the Rockies than Matt Holliday did. We do appreciate you fighting today, Brock.
All righty. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brock. How many gold gloves did Schmitty wind up with?
10.
It's pretty good.
Guys, we have a suggestion here on the text line from the 314. Maybe it was Miles Pig that got loose, and that's why he's not with us in the 4 o'clock fight.
That could
I don't
be.
Think so.
Does he get a rematch if that's the case?
I don't think so, because we got a texter who said, sorry, my wife jumped out of the car on 40.
Oh, come on.
You know what? I'm going to read this person's phone number, and if you're a lady listening,
don't
you should
it.
Type it in and see if it's your husband, because then you might have some conversation later. No, I'm not going to do that.
Hmm. And nobody needs to call us idiots just because nobody said Brock Olivo, okay? Calm
oh,
down.
Oh, yeah. Number
Calm
retired
down.
At the University of Missouri.
Yeah.
All right.
That's
it's
cool.
416 in the Fast Lane. Your time check is brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. The Cardinals have given Matt Carpenter multiple opportunities to succeed this season, but he isn't in the lineup tonight. Is this a sign that maybe the MARP tenure for at least 2019 is ending? That's next on 101 ESPN.
Well, I don't know about Jeff Galooly. That's a little much.
Yeah, it's a little harsh, isn't it?
That's totally harsh. I don't think we need all that.
Oh.
And by the way, a decision has been made today.
Right. Since the start of last September, so we are nearing a calendar year, Matt Carpenter has played in 123 Cardinal games. He is 88 for 433. That is a .203 batting average with a sub 600, closer to a sub 700, about a 650 OPS. And that's just not going to cut it at any position in Major League Baseball in 2019. And by the way, you can weigh in with the Hot Shots text line 65780 or leave a mic drop on the 101 ESPN app. But I think this will be 100%, because as much as we like the rebound of Dexter Fowler this year, it took an entire offseason for him to get back to what he had been prior to his disaster year of last year. And for whatever reason, and it's kind of weird, the Cardinals in back-to-back years have had guys that have had just unbelievably disastrous years. Last year, obviously, with Fowler, and this year with Carpenter. And it was about this time last year, I can look it up for you, that Fowler got hurt. I think it might have been August 11th that he got hurt and was out for the year and came back at the beginning of this year. I do think that probably emotionally and physically, it would be well for Matt Carpenter to not play anymore this year. I can't imagine, short of the depression that Dexter Fowler admitted that he was dealing with, that there isn't something physically wrong with Carpenter.
I have to believe there is. And we could totally be wrong about that, but he just does not look right. It could be a back. It could be a shoulder. Maybe something else is bothering him that we don't know anything about. And this happens regularly in sports where a guy's injured or he's hurt, but he can feel like he could play through it and wants to play through it. But what ends up happening is it's such a detriment to the team, although he can't allow himself to back off. I absolutely believe for many players, not all, but many, I believe in the idea of the reset button. I believe in the idea of when the season is over, going into the off season, doing whatever you feel like you need to do, clear your head for a while, work on your swing, do whatever you feel like you need to mentally and physically to get right, hit that reset button and come back in February of the following year and be ready to go. I believe that can happen. I don't think now that we have seen Carpenter do what he's done for 5 months of this season and the final month of last. So we're talking about 6 full months of baseball like this. I just don't believe it's going to happen for him. And now you for this year, for 2019, it's not going to happen.
I agree.
And I think you have to look at it in a cost benefit situation. Is the cost of losing games or losing at bats while he's in there, is that more than the benefit of hoping that he becomes the typical Matt Carpenter in the final month of the season? And I think the answer is yes.
And clearly, the Cardinals, who have people in their minor league system that the major league staff talks to on a daily basis, the minor league system liked Tommy Edman enough to promote him, to tell the major league team, hey, this is a guy that you should have up at the major league level. And it's not just the major league manager, the major league staff thought enough of Tommy Edman to start putting him in the lineup. And Mike Schilt saying, he's an everyday player. So regardless of what you think of Edman, they think that they have a guy that can play third base. And clearly, as much as you might dislike what you see of Edman, He's better than what Carpenter's been.
Yes, and it doesn't say a lot. I think we have to admit that. But at this point, the way he's performing versus what we're seeing from Carpenter, Edman, because he's the only guy there that can do it at the moment, he's got to get the majority of the starts, if not almost all of them. And Carpenter may not like that, but they need to have that conversation. Yeah. And I don't know how else you get around this, because I think it's so important to make sure the best lineup is out there every day. And I know that's an old sports cliche. We say it all the time, and we talk about it in May. You got to have the best lineup out there every day. Well, you're managing differently in the beginning of the season because you're trying to make sure you get through to the end. We're at the end. Yeah. We're at the final month of the year, so they have to put the best lineup out there every day. They're a game back of the division right now after the Cubs won last night and this afternoon. This division is tight. You cannot afford to put a bad lineup out there, or not the optimal lineup.
And by the way, don't give me the revisionist crap about how they shouldn't have gotten rid of Jed Jerko. Jed Jerko was terrible. He's been in decline for 3 years, and he was an awful player this year. And yes, the Cardinals should have traded Jed Jerko.
I don't know who's got a problem with that.
There are people out there.
Maybe people grabbing at straws here, but that's not... That isn't the issue. If you want to take issue with the Cardinals and what they did about their third base situation, you could say there was a premier free agent available that could play third base for them during the offseason, and they did not go get him. You can make that argument if you want to, but Jed Jerko certainly isn't the answer to what the Cardinals' issues are now.
Your text is 65780. First one from the 314. And why not send Carpenter to Memphis for the rest of the year? Why does he have to stay on the roster? Well, two things. Number one, there are 10 days left in the Memphis season. And the second thing is that as a vested veteran, Carpenter has to provide permission to the team if they would desire to send him to the minors. And I don't think that they'll even go there with the contract that they gave him and the clear respect that they have for Matt Carpenter. I don't think that they would ask him to go to the minors. Last year, the Orioles asked Chris Davis to go down to the minors, and he said no. I think most vested veterans are going to say no, and I would think Marp would be the same kind of guy. But what good would it do you to send him down for 10 days?
No, it doesn't really matter right now. I mean, you're getting up to September 1st. Rosters are going to expand. It should be fine. I know that we had somebody who texted in, why not Jairo Munoz? I don't really think he's the answer at third base either. He hasn't really had a very good offensive season as we look at the rest of the roster. There just aren't a ton of great options on this roster to play third base at a good level. And I think that's what we're looking for, an above average level right now, aren't we? Well, that's what we're hoping to get. No one's going to be superior over there, but we're just hoping for somebody who's at least average. At this moment, Tommy Edman might be your best chance, even though I still don't know if I believe in him as an everyday player. They do, and they could be wrong about that. We don't know, and you're not going to know for a while. But at this moment, there just isn't a better option to play every day at third.
No. Another text from the 636. How much of the Carpenter situation is on Mo? Why in the world did they extend his contract when they did? This is a black eye to upper management. It's a mysterious extension. It really is. Mm-hmm. With the year that they had next year, the option year, in addition to this year, and especially with as reluctant as they have been to sign players in their 30s, it's a mystery. I don't understand it.
It seems to me, from somebody who's not in the room when they make these decisions, it seems to me like when they take risks, they are more willing to take the risk of extending somebody they know, somebody who's already in the organization and has done things for them. They're more comfortable taking that kind of risk than taking the risk on a premier free agent that's available in the offseason. That kind of risk they're averse to. They have no problem. Well, we know Matt Carpenter. We know what he's capable of doing, and we know we like him, so let's go ahead and lock him up. That's the way it looks to me, and I don't always think that's the right call. I understand the thought process, but clearly it doesn't always work.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Marp is out of the lineup tonight, and Tommy Edman is in. And it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, regardless of what Edman does. The test is going to be what the lineup looks like tomorrow. Hey, if you haven't had your fantasy football draft yet, it should be just around the corner. And our friend Kyle Elfring from SiriusXM has all the advice you need to get ready for it. Send us your texts or mic drops, and Kyle will answer them next on 101 ESPN. It is great to be back in fantasy football season and visiting with our friend Kyle L. Frank, fantasy expert from Sirius XM. And he knows everything about every sport. He's one of the all-time greats and a guy that I've known for a long time. Kyle, how you doing?
An all-time great, Randy.
You're one of the.
Like I died,
okay.
Nobody told me.
Okay, it's. I was going to say one of the most knowledgeable fantasy people I've ever met. You're the most knowledgeable fantasy guy I've ever met.
Well, I don't know if that's a strong competition, but I appreciate it nonetheless. Good to hear from you guys. How you doing?
And great. You know what, Kyle? I don't know if we've had this conversation or not, but what year did you intern at KMOX?
Let's see, internship at KMOX would have been late 90s. I want to say like 98 through 2000. And Randy probably is a better judge of those years than I am, but it would have been about 98 through 2000.
Yeah, okay. Because you spent multiple summers with us.
Yeah.
I needed a lot of help. That's why.
So the reason I ask is I believe you and I were there at the exact same time.
How about that?
Because I do remember one time you and I being there once. Maybe Kyle will remember this. John Butler was the old the mm-hmm. news director,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm. I remember John. Yeah.
Okay. And so I normally worked on weekends for McLaughlin. And there was a Monday, for whatever reason, I came in. And me and there was another intern, and I think it was you, were sitting in the office. And John Butler walked into the office. He was looking for Randy or somebody else. And he looked at the two of us just sitting there, and he goes, gentlemen, show a little enterprise. And he walked out. Does this sound familiar to you?
Slightly.
Okay.
You got to remember, this is over two decades ago.
Yes.
I've been through a lot of things. I remember the sliding door in the sports office. I do remember that. And I do have a slight memory of John making that statement.
Yep.
I have a very distinct memory of Dan McLaughlin working with the carts, and they weren't clean or something wasn't taping over very well, and Dan literally was frustrated. He was at wit's end, and he took the cart out of there, threw it, it bounced on the floor and landed perfectly in the trash can about 20 feet away. And it was one of the most divine moments of my radio career. I almost thought, like, oh my gosh, Dan can do that? I hope someday I can do that like Dan. I still can't do it, and nobody uses carts anymore. But I remember Dan bouncing that cart into the trash can in frustration and being like, wow, that guy could drain a three-pointer from halfway across the world if he can hit that trash can from halfway across the studio in there. It was impressive, but there were a lot of memories in there. And Chris, I don't want to besmirch you. I kind of have some faint memories. I remember Andy Strickland was there when I was, and so that kind of computes. And Randy, of course, mm-hmm. you probably dealt with all of us and had to, you know, make your way through all of us. But we owe all of our careers to Randy Carricker, I think.
Oh, God.
Thank you very much.
Oh, God. Please don't make me tell him that.
All right, Kyle, let's get to your main thing, which is fantasy and drafts coming up. Let's start with this, though. Keeper League, a guy from the 618 says, I have Melvin Gordon. How screwed am I?
Pretty screwed. I think Gordon is hardcore and digging his heels in on this holdout. And I know there's not much to gain from it. Like, he can't become – it's not the Lev Bell thing. He can't be a free agent next year. This is literally just taking a stance to take a stance. I think what he's trying to say to the Chargers is, hey, you want to win in one of the final years of Phillip Rivers? Well, you need me. I don't know if the Chargers are going to meet his asking price. They are traditionally a pretty cheap organization. I think Gordon is actually willing to sit out at least half the season. If he shows up, I think it's by week 10 or so, he can still get a year towards free agency. I think we could see a lengthy holdout. It's a little different from the Zeke Elliott situation, but if your keeper is Melvin Gordon, yeah, you should be scrambling, because I think September could be an absolute total wash, and maybe even October.
And this one from the 314, Kyle. I have a keeper league. I can keep two of these three. Adam Thielen in the 9th, George Kittle in the 7th, or Damian Williams in the 15th. Those are the three, and he can keep two of them.
I'd probably go Thielen and Williams. I always lean running backs, and Williams as the quote-unquote starter in Kansas City in the 15th is an absolute steal, so you take a shot on that. And Andy Reid has always, you know, played favorites in the backfield, usually goes with one guy, so Williams should be the best bet there, and that bargain is absolutely there. Thielen versus Kittle, I'm not a huge fan of Thielen, but I'm also not a huge fan of racking up a lot of talent at tight end. And everybody has a different opinion on this. For me, the opinion is I'm not going to invest on tight end. Thielen costs less. He's at a position that, to me, is more important. I'm going Adam Thielen over George Kittle.
2.5 weeks before the season starts for the Dallas Cowboys, and it sounds like they have made a really good offer to Zeke Elliott. Is he going to take it, and is he going to be ready for week one?
I don't know if he's going to take this particular offer. I think he is more than in the right spot to sit there and wait and wait and wait. What are we sitting at, like August 22nd? So if we get to August 30th, September 1, I could see Zeke getting a little more serious about accepting what the Cowboys may offer. That's a team, much like the Chargers with Melvin Gordon, where the window is kind of closing. You know, it's like do it or don't do it. And for the Cowboys, I really do believe that Jerry Jones is always going to make the move to do it, to make it happen. And I think eventually the Cowboys will cave here. It may be similar to that Emmitt Smith situation of, 25 years ago where they had to lose two games before Emmitt Smith got his money. That could happen here. I think Smith eventually arrives. I like him to arrive a lot earlier than Melvin Gordon. I think Emmitt Smith is still somebody that, as of now, I'd be willing to take late in the first round. If he were in camp, he'd be a top three pick,
so
even a top two pick. But without being in camp, it's probably in the top 10 for me.
Zeke late in the first. Where does and where has Todd Gurley been going?
Early second, maybe even middle second. The Todd Gurley, it's fascinating. He was the big concern throughout the summer, and then we got hit with all these other problems. You know, Melvin Gordon holding out, Ezekiel Elliott holding out, A.J. Green getting injured, Antonio Brown just being Antonio Brown. There were so many other issues that cropped up, and Gurley's kind of like disappeared into the background. Here's the thing with Gurley. I think when he's on the field, he's going to be fine. I just think we're going to move away from having 22 to 25 touches a week. Maybe it's going to be 17 to 19 touches a week. I think he's a great RB2. If you're drafting early in the second round, say around the 15th to 18th pick, and somehow, some way, Todd Gurley's falling to you, jump on it. I have no problem with that whatsoever, but I'm not investing anything in the top 10 on Todd Gurley. That sweet spot is probably 12 to 14 with Todd Gurley, and in a lot of leagues he's going lower because the aura around Todd Gurley is a lot more negative. So middle of the second round is a good spot to take a chance on Gurley, and they may just manage him through the season, but I could still see him being effective on a per-touch basis.
Kyle, here is Kevin for you on a mic drop.
Oh, I need your help bad. Okay, so half point PPR, no mandatory tight end. You can play him as a receiver or in the flex. I need to keep either Tyreek Hill in the third, Kerryon Johnson in the ninth, or George Kittle in the 17th. I'm already keeping Kamara, so I have the elite, you know, number one running back. Please, please, please help. Please help me.
I got to say, your guys really know how to use the mic drop. I wish our callers were that as efficient and to the point as that guy was. He gave me all the information, half-point PPR, the rounds. He told me what he had with Kamara. I'm going Kittle here. I mean, that's just too much of a bargain to pass up. Tyreek Hill is tempting in the third, but we still have issues where if Tyreek Hill makes one misstep, it's off to the suspension list. And it's not that I dislike Tyreek Hill or dislike what he can do throughout the season, but I think Kittle in the 17th is just too difficult to pass up. You've got your stud running back in Kamara. So in this instance, with an absolute steal at the tight end spot, go with George Kittle.
Let's see if Paul is as concise as Kevin was.
Should I take Travis Kelce with the number 11 overall pick? If the top four running backs and top three receivers on the board are gone, thanks.
No, you don't. This is, again, we're keep revisiting the tight end scenario. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple. In most leagues, you're required to start two, and you should be required to start three receivers every single week. It's one tight end. There are three stud tight ends. It's Ertz and it's Kelce, and then you make your way and you dig a little deeper to Kittle. But they're all in the top three. For me, give me a stud wide receiver, give me a stud running back, and he mentions he's at 11 or something. You can still get Michael Thomas there. You can still get Juju Smith-Schuster there. James Conner is still available there. If you're into the whole Odell Beckham circus, you can jump on that. To me, Kelce, it's just too early there. And that Chiefs offense, it's impressive, but you've got to look at the history of the NFL. Repeating what the Chiefs did last year is very, very difficult. It's not saying the Chiefs can't be a top offense. It's just I'm saying they can't be a great offense again this season. I really pull back a bit on saying what they did last year is repeatable this year. I'd bail on that.
All right. And one more mic drop. This is Kyle for Kyle.
Longtime listener, first-time mic dropper. Who should I take with the fourth overall pick of a 10-man half-point PPR? Most mocks have McCaffrey, Barkley, and Kamara going 1, 2, 3. Then it becomes a little more cloudy. Thanks for the help.
Yeah, the Zeke situation makes it cloudy. He was part of that Mount Rushmore, if you will, of the top four picks. It was all four running backs until the Zeke situation, which probably leads you into the DeAndre Hopkins area. You know, it's a half-point PPR. I wouldn't necessarily say you have to be married to that, but I would say this. If you go receiver at number four, you should be able to slot a pretty high-end running back coming back in the second round. I think you're stretching a bit. If you want to go Lev Bell at four, you might want to make that move. Here's my stance on Lev Bell. He'll get a lot of touches. I don't know if the efficiency and the per-touch success will be there for Lev Bell. I think your safe selection at four is just taking DeAndre Hopkins. If it were a full-point PPR, I'm all into DeAndre Hopkins. Half-point PPR, there's a little bit of waiver there. You know, maybe you go Julio Jones, who I think is always good for 1,400 yards. And, you know, maybe you make a move for somebody like an Odell Beckham, and you think he's going to have 10 to 12 touchdowns. But I think Hopkins is a safe choice there.
Kyle, do you have the football show going tonight?
We got it going tonight, 7 o'clock, Sirius 210 XM87, every night at 7 o'clock. And we'll be firing up the Sunday show at the start of September, which will recap all the action throughout the day.
Looking forward to it. We'll be tuned in, and we'll talk to you next week. Great to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear from you guys. Take it easy, and enjoy the night. Enjoy the weekend, okay?
All right, thank you, Kyle. Kyle Elfrink from Sirius XM 210 and XM Channel 87, and you can hear him tonight at 7. Hey, if you've listened to our show lately, you've heard Ranji go on and on and on and on. And on about the Cardinals maximizing their lineup.
Realist.
How do they do that, though? That's next on 101 ESPN. So we're looking for your mic drops here on 101 ESPN. Use the mic drop feature on the 101 ESPN app. Ranj, how does a manager maximize a lineup, and what would the ideal Cardinal lineup look like to you?
You know what? They did it today. This is it, and this is...
And Delane Thomas is not in there.
Well, no, he's not in it, but you've got Fowler, who's your good on-base percentage guy. He's in the first spot. Colton Wong has been really good on base. So now you have, and they've done it for two nights in a row now, you have two of your best OBP guys batting in front of who are supposed to be your major run producers in Paul Goldschmidt and Marcell Ozuna. And you have a guy playing third base who is doing better than the guy who was there previously and should be the starter. I mean, this is really about the best they can do with what they have. Maybe it's a little bit better if, and again, this is only potentially because we don't know what Lane Thomas is long term. Maybe he's better than Harrison Bader. I don't know, but I don't have a problem with Bader playing right now. I mean, that because he does have a bit of a track record. I think the biggest problem for me when the lineups were coming out over the last couple of weeks was Tommy Edman batting second in front of everybody. And again, over the course of a year, it's not going to be that much difference. Maybe 10 to 15 runs if you have your absolute best lineup out there every day. But this team doesn't really have the leeway to be able to put out a suboptimal lineup in this division, as close as the race is, where they are in second place. You don't have the luxury of giving away games and at-bats.
Interesting thing about tonight's lineup is that there have been several seasons in which the Cardinals have had three or four number six hitters, and Molina is not a number six hitter.
No.
Usually you can pick one out. Usually in any lineup you can say, okay, that's a number six hitter. Yeah. But Yachty, his offense, right? Actually, Matt Wieters would be a lot better there. If you wanted to maximize your lineup tonight, you'd have Matt Wieters in there.
But it's about maximizing your roster for the night, not just really the lineup. And I think whenever he's healthy and is rested or feels good, Molina probably needs to play in front of Wieters, and Wieters should play not every day or even half of the time, but I think he should get a look a couple of times a week. That's just to keep Molina fresh, to keep him going throughout the regular season. You know, we've got a month to go, a little bit over a month. It would be nice to be able to keep him in that feeling good mode, and I'm sure he feels good right now, but you know, as you're an older player, in a couple of weeks, he might be dragging a little bit. So it would be nice to give Wieters some opportunities every now and then. But for a team that doesn't have a great lineup and doesn't have a great roster, this is about as well as they can do.
It is interesting that the Cardinals have Dylan Carlson, who's their number one prospect now, thriving at Memphis.
Yeah.
They don't want to bring him up right away. They're very cautious, obviously, as we've seen with Arozarena. And we've seen with numerous minor leaguers, they want their guys to be seasoned. And I wonder if they will put Dylan Carlson on the roster and bring him up in September.
That's a good question. I don't know if I would necessarily throw him into that fire of having to help them immediately because they're in a playoff race. But I'm not entirely opposed to it. I just think with what they have, based on track record, based on some experience, what you're looking at tonight is pretty good. You know, again, I think if there were going to be any real improvements with this team and with the lineup moving forward, it's going to come probably from outside the organization or somebody like Carlson when he is totally ready to be here. He looks great. I don't know if I want to rush him along, though, and I don't think that's necessary at this moment.
By the way, Carlson last night 3-for-4, and in 7 games, 29 at-bats at Memphis, he's hitting .552 with a 1.537 OPS.
Looks great.
2 homers, 6 ribs, and 3 doubles and a triple.
Well, would you feel comfortable with that? Just saying, hey, kid, you've been tearing it up, and you go out there and get it done. We need you to help us. We need all the offense we can get. So everything you've been doing, we need you to do that for 1 month.
Yeah, I'd be intrigued.
Every day. I would be intrigued to watch him play. There's no question about that. And you know what? If they decided that's what they wanted to do, I am not going to complain. But I can understand why they wouldn't want to. Because he's a young player and because they have a future that they think he's going to give them and they want to be careful with it. It would be fine if they did it the other way, though, too. I'm perfectly okay with it.
Mic drop from Mike on 101 ESPN.
How the hell this happens 2 days in a row, I don't know, but Ranji hit it spot on. They have the mentality of somebody who will go spend more money at their local store, at their local catalog store, rather than getting on the big bad internet and finding a better price or even a better product. They consistently overpay for guys they know out of the catalog, the local store, because the big bad internet, for, you know, free agency, is just too scary for them.
Mm. It's interesting.
$82.5 million on Fowler. They spent $30.5 million on Brett Cecil. They brought in Andrew Miller for $24 million. I don't know. They spent $130 million on Paul Goldschmidt. I don't know if that's really the case.
See, that's the issue, is that they're willing...
$85 million on Mike Leake?
Well, they're willing to go all out for that mid-tier guy.
Yeah,
and give that mid-level guy a bunch of money, or multiple mid-level guys a bunch of money, but they're not willing to take that premier dude, the Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, who's been tearing it up lately, and give them a job on a long contract. So they're willing to risk. It's just they have a different kind of risk they're willing to go.
Yeah, and like I've mentioned before, a couple of years ago, they spent more than $250 million on contracts
spread out over time.
Yeah, but it was commitments of more $257 million, and they just haven't worked out. And Fowler and Cecil were a big part of that. You had Fowler, Cecil, Piscotty, Molina, Martinez, and for the most part, those deals have not worked out. Would you say any of them have for the Cardinals?
I mean, Martinez doesn't kill him.
No, but when you look at the deal, though,
right,
and what they've gotten out of it.
Yeah, they are willing to spend money, but again, it's to a point, and they're willing to spend it in a certain way.
Yeah, not, I would argue that they need to spend smarter.
Smarter, and they probably could if you look at what their revenue is and how they do comparative to other teams and then how other teams spend, they probably could go a little bit more. I'm not saying that they certainly aren't cheap, but they probably could commit a little bit more.
Their percentage of revenue committed to payroll is the highest in baseball. I believe Washington is second and Boston is third now. But the Cardinals, in terms of what, according to Forbes, they're bringing in and what they are paying out, highest percentage of revenue committed to payroll in baseball.
I'd like to see that list. Where that is. I have not seen that one.
I had to put it together.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
They show you the books?
No, but just everybody knows what the payrolls are, and Forbes has the revenues.
I've seen the valuations and the revenues. I don't know if that's what the percentage is. I will concede to you on that, my friend.
Forbes,
because I haven't seen it yet myself. Yeah.
They do a good
study. I don't know if they know everything.
I don't think they know everything.
Yeah, I think they do pretty well.
And I would probably think that the Cardinals look at Ballpark Village as an example, as a real estate deal rather than a baseball deal. And those revenues probably are separate. Well, a lot of people would like to think that Ballpark Village, because it's named Ballpark Village, would be directly baseball revenue. If I'm the Cardinals, I'm looking at it as a real estate development.
Well, is that the right thing, you think?
For them, it is.
Well, for them. But I'm saying if you're running a baseball team, and again, I believe it's a public trust. If you're running a baseball team, is that the right optics? To have a complex of buildings and bars and restaurants and office spaces and living spaces directly across the street, mm-hmm. tied into the ballpark, but then say, yeah, that money has nothing to do with what's happening on the field, because people go directly from that ballpark across the street before the game, after the game,
they
spend their money, and their assumption is, well, everything I spend in here is going to the team, and this looks like a lot of money and a lot of people.
And that's the difference. The money's going to Cordish, which is 50% owner of the Ballpark Village, and I don't know how the books are set up. That's the thing. We don't know if it is going into baseball revenue. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, have you ever had an ex that you just can't stop thinking about? That's happening with one NFL team right now. We've got the details next on 101 ESPN.